Great to see you tonight. Everybody have a pretty good day? We had a very busy day. Certainly appreciate the opportunity to be here again tonight. In the back of the auditorium, we've been meaning to mention this for two or three evenings, there is a chart like this. It actually goes with the alcohol addiction lesson. And what it does on this side, it lists the progression of alcoholism from the first drink or so all the way down to the bottom where the addiction is in full swing. And then on this side, it's signs of recovery. What I often do is I'll hang this on a bulletin board or a refrigerator or someplace in an office where I'm working. And this helps me to be able to measure where people are in terms of their disease of addiction or in terms of their recovery. So it's just a handy reference chart. This is called a Jelinek chart. It's named after a medical doctor who actually charted, after he talked to a number of patients, he saw the same pattern over and over, and so he charted this. There is an equal chart that I didn't bring with me, but it's called the Nelson chart. The Nelson chart lists adolescents, the progression for adolescents and their issue. By the way, on this chart, most of those that I go over this chart with, the addicts and the alcoholics, what they will tell me is that when you get to the bottom, you don't just kind of go down and back up. That when you get to the bottom, it's kind of like a pendulum. You swing back and forth, in and out, and then finally you grab hold and you start moving up. Some end up in relapse. They'll get part of the way up and they go back down to the bottom. But that's a chart, and there are some of those in the back. If we need more, I'm sure that those can be printed for you. I have a statement I want to read first, and there's a blank in it that I would like for you to put a name in, someone that you know. It says, basically, I have come to the frightening conclusion that I am the decisive element in my blank. That could be husband's wife, husband's life, wife's life, child's life, mom and dad's life, whatever. I'm the decisive element. It is my personal approach that creates the climate. It is my daily mood that makes the weather. I possess tremendous power to make this person's life miserable or joyous. I can be a tool of torture or an instrument of inspiration. I can humiliate or I can humor. I can hurt or I can heal. In all situations, it is my response that largely decides whether a crisis will be escalated or de-escalated, and a person humanized or dehumanized. Now, I think that's a powerful statement that says that we can set the mood for the people that are around us. Our influence is very important, even in realms of recovery. Helping people to climb out of this deep pit that sometimes we get into, that is so vital. We have a lot of material again tonight to cover, and the topic we're going to talk about is depression. When I was in northern Kentucky, I found it ironic that I was in a pocket of people, and they would come out, that came out and told me they were depressed. And I asked them, well, who told you were depressed? And they kept telling me that the doctors in the area told them they were depressed. I asked them, well, what kind of depression do you have? And you know that deer in the headlight we talked about last night? That's the look I got. Because a lot of times what people will do is they will go to a professional or someone will tell them, you seem like you're depressed. And I want to suggest to you tonight that not all depressions are the same. As a matter of fact, there's 9 different kinds of depression, and they aren't all susceptible to the traditional treatments for major depression, which would be usually pills and some talk therapy. But we'll talk about that as we go. All depression is not the same. But sometimes in life, we have good days and bad days. We are not met by God to be happy all the time. But somehow in this country, we have the idea that we either need to be kind of in a regular mood or we need to be in an elevated mood most of the time. And if not, then something's wrong with us. But I want to suggest that depression has a place. There are periods of time that we get depressed, and that is a normal response to some issues that we face in life. For instance, if somebody tells us to take a hike, we might be depressed because a relationship may have been jeopardized or may have been lost. If someone in our life that is significant dies or is in a critical illness, then we may find ourselves in a period of depression. When we have gone to the mountaintops, we come back, maybe we've done something with a summer camp or something, and we come back all pumped up, and then that after drain, we may find ourselves experiencing a low after that, after an eventful occurrence. So depression is a normal response, but it becomes abnormal when we stay in that state of depression. And we'll talk about that in this lesson this evening, and I ask you to stay with me. But basically, in a survey, according to the Mental Health of America, one in five teens suffers from clinical depression. And by that I mean major depression. Each year, almost 5,000 teens commit suicide. It's the third leading cause of death in adolescence, and suicide is usually preceded by that bout of depression where a person is feeling despair, helpless, and hopeless. It's the second leading cause of death among college-age students. So suicide certainly fits into this topic this evening. Sadness is a normal reaction to life's situations, setbacks, and disappointments. But depression is different from sadness in that this occupies a person's mind pretty persistently. The day-to-day life is interfered with. There is no joy in Mudville, if you would. It interferes with a person's ability to work, to eat, to sleep, and even to have fun. As a matter of fact, sometimes people don't even get out of bed or don't want to get out of bed, not because they're sleepy, but because they don't want to face the world. They just want to make the world go away. And so we have feelings that go with depression, feelings of I'm helpless, I'm hopeless, and often I'm worthless. And these are unrelenting thoughts that come into our minds. That mood stays there and seeks relief, and relief may not come. We may stay in that state for several days, weeks, or months. And we're going to talk about that tonight. But some of the common signs of a depressed mood, and I'm talking about people who are depressed for a longer period of time, the feelings, as we said before, of helplessness and hopelessness, the loss of interest in daily activities or regular things that used to bring us joy, changes in appetite. Usually that is about not eating, but sometimes it's about overeating, and certainly results in weight changes, either putting a lot on or losing a lot of weight just because we don't even have interest perhaps in eating much. The sleep changes and is often a disturbed sleep with bizarre dreams, sometimes in vivid colors, nightmares sometimes, anger or irritability. Ignore the 8 in irritability. But people just kind of in a rage. You set them off just real quick. Or a person may turn that anger in a different direction. And we'll talk about that. Loss of energy. I just don't even feel like getting up and doing anything. And I don't have a reason to feel that way. Self-loathing. You know, poor me. Pitiful me. Someone done me wrong. And so just kind of moaning for ourselves. Reckless behavior. I don't care if I live or die. So we may drive a car. We may drive out in front of somebody. By the way, do y'all stop all the way at stop signs? Somebody told me the other night I needed to repent because I may have creeped through a stop sign. But I noticed that person went through 4 tonight and just slowed down because I was counting. I was right behind them. I won't tell you who that is, but I think he just raised his hand. All right. Concentration problems. go with this. In other words, a person has trouble keeping a thought. And then unexplained aches and pains, we start having somatic issues or physical symptoms that take place. The brain often processes things very slowly. We have a neglect even of our personal appearance. Don't really care sometimes how we look, and so we neglect that. Our memory, it's like we are preoccupied with other stuff, and we just sometimes we just don't go to the trouble or are not able to have good recall. Inability to concentrate or to think clearly. And then suicidal thoughts or behaviors. And then, again, negative attitudes. The whole world stinks. And there's nothing good going on. And that often is shown by acting out. Risk factors. We've talked about many of these. I'm going to leave that. But risk factors do include such things as substance abuse. As we talked about, some people use substances to self-medicate to try to get out of these moods. And so we may find people with the uppers, speeders, cocaine, meth, some of these, to try to lift themselves out of a depression. So not all substance abuse is just for the thrill of the substance. Sometimes a person's trying to find a solution to a deeper problem. And we have to look for that as we work with these individuals. Now, there were some depressed characters in the Bible. Depression is not something just for this generation. But there were some people that were depressed in the Bible. At least they showed symptoms of depression. So we have Abraham over in Genesis, the 15th chapter. And as you read that chapter, you see Abraham was kind of, he was in a down mood. Was he clinically depressed? I don't have enough information to draw that conclusion. But I do know that there are some indications of depression there with Abraham in Genesis 15. Jonah was very clearly depressed. He went to Nineveh. He tried to get out of it. He didn't want to go. And God, of course, created had a big fish that swallowed him up. And then he gets puked up on the land and has to wipe himself off. And then he goes and preaches to the city. And he's thinking all along, they're not going to do anything. This is a waste of my time. So he's kind of down in a negative mood, but he goes and preaches anyway. And lo and behold, the people repent. And then in the fourth chapter, we've got Jonah out sitting on a hill, and ultimately he sits under a gourd that provides some shade, and then he gets mad, and he's so mad that he says, I just want to die. Those are some symptoms of depression. And Jonah had that because Jonah knew that if this city survives, this is the capital city of the Babylonians, and if this city survives, then we're gone. They'll come over there and whoop us, and we'll be their slaves. And so I have played a part in the betrayal of my own nation. And Jonah has some problems with that. The entire book of Jonah talks about a man who was on his game. The first chapter or so, we find all the things Jonah had in life. He was a success by anybody's standard, whether you measure him spiritually or whether you measure the physical things that he had. He was a success in his day and time. People looked up to him. He was a judge in the city. And folks admired him when he sat in the gate and his family. But one day, you know the story, everything came down. And if you read that book closely, as Satan attacks him, it says, and immediately and straightway, and these things happen in pretty rapid sequence, where all of the things that were blessings got taken away, one right after the other, after the other, after the other. And then we find Job getting the ultimate news. There's a tornado hit a house where your children were, and all 10 of them are dead. Now, by this time, Jonah doesn't have but just about 4 servants, as you read earlier, about 4 servants. And I often wondered, and do now, who went to that collapsed house and pulled those children out and buried them? Job only had 4 servants left. And then he had his wife and himself, 6 people, to go through the rubble and pull those people out. I wonder if that was the situation. But they had such a somber burial that day of all of his children. Well, it gets worse from there. You know the story. And Job is struck with boils. And he's thrown out on the, or put out on the trash dump because he's considered to be contaminated. And his enemies, those people that he had had a part in expelling from the city, now they come along and spit on him and make fun of him. And this man is in tremendous pain. He can't sleep through the night, so he prays for the day to come. And then the day comes and he prays for the night to come because he can't find rest during the day. This man's miserable. That's describing depression, that sickness sometimes brings on depression. But you know, sometimes we add to that list and say, well, Job had these friends that came to see him, and they just added to his problems. But I want you to notice something we miss. And that is, Job's friends came. That's important. Even though people don't always say things that are particularly encouraging, it is helpful during times of depression, during times of tragedy and grief and sorrow, for people to come. And sometimes that's all that's important, is that they showed up, they were there for me. Well, it so happens that his friends had some things to say that weren't truthful, and that happens today. Folks come to situations like that, and they'll say some of the craziest things when we have lost a loved one. But they come. In 1 Kings 19, Elijah, in the 18th chapter, we find him on Mount Carmel in the pinnacle, a glorious moment for God's people as the prophets of the Baalim and the Ashereth are put to shame, and as God is triumphant and the enemies and the altars are thrown down and God's people are triumphant. And what do you expect in the next chapter? You see, he's on a pinnacle over here, but in the next chapter he's despairing even of life itself. As a matter of fact, he says, I'm the only one left. I just want to die. Do you see how that's the pity pot? You maybe have heard lessons or preached lessons on that yourself. But he's out here on the pity pot. Fact is, he is in such bad shape that he's not even eating. God sends him some food. And we're going to talk about him as to what God's cure for depression is a little later on. But just remember, let's leave him there for right now, out here feeling sorry for himself. Then King Saul, we talked about him a couple nights ago, and how there was an evil spirit from the Lord that troubled this man. And that's a state of depression that is described there. Notice in this case, this is a little different than Job's case. Job was being tested by the devil, and his depression comes on. But King Saul is being punished by God, and his depression comes on. We can go to David in the Psalms. And we see David was one that there were periods of times that he was depressed, and that was basically just a situation. Something happened in life that was a reversal. But other times we see he was depressed and felt the absence of God because of his sin with Bathsheba. So I draw that conclusion that sometimes depression is a result of our sin, and that we ought to be depressed if we're out here working against God. We ought to be depressed. And there's a way to get rid of that depression, and that is to repent and confess our sins. But there are other times that depression is just a response to life situations. And that's what we learn from these Bible characters. If you want to read about a depressed person, read the book of Jeremiah. It's a long book. But Jeremiah is called the weeping prophet for a reason. And basically, it's because this book is very, very, it's a very sad book. There's a sadness throughout all of it. But that is situational based on what has happened to Israel. They have been taken away into captivity. Well, let's look at some of these verses. David said, when I kept silent, my bones grew old through my groaning all the long day. For day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My vitality was turned into the draught of summer, Selah. What's he saying here? He's saying that when he was working against God, that there was a depression that came over him, and he says that it was like bone deep. It was like a rottenness in his bones. He felt this. Now, there was a good thing that happened with his depression. his depression, that down mood, brought him to repentance. And when we have done wrong, and we know we've done wrong, and there's shame that goes with that and sadness that goes with that, we can either sit there being bone sick, or we can say, I need to confess this thing, get rid of this sin, and thus be in right relationship with God. And guess what happens? The depression lifts. Some people would rather stay in their depression than to admit they've been wrong. And that's what David's talking about here. That when he stayed in that, that was a problem. Now let's shift the gear just a moment, because sometimes depression gets into suicidal depression. And there are suicides sometimes among members of the church or their families. I got a call one morning where a grandmother told me, she says, Art, please come over. My grandson is hanging from the rafters of the garage over my car. I got there. He had hung himself in his grandmother's garage. And I was asked to conduct the funeral. These are sad. Were there any symptoms with this young man? I wasn't particularly close to him, but I understand there were some symptoms. So let's take a test. The answers are here, by the way. All right, so here's the test. People who talk about suicide won't really do it. True or false? False. People who talk about or attempt suicide really want to die. True or false? False. Anyone who tries to kill himself or herself must be crazy. True or false? False. If a person is determined to kill himself or herself, nothing's going to stop them. True or false? False. Talking about suicide may give somebody the idea to do it. True or false? False. There are some common misconceptions, and so the word suicide is a word often that we avoid. But sometimes our sixth sense kicks in. And we see a person who's struggling with something, and they're really down in the dumps, and there's that sixth sense that kicks in, and it's, maybe I better ask the question. And so we ask, are you thinking about hurting yourself? Or have you been thinking about that? And very often the thought is, well, yeah, I've thought about it. And if we were to take a poll here, there's several in this audience. I don't even know you or know your situation, but I know that the answer to that would be, yeah, I've thought about it. I've thought about if the world would be better off if I wasn't here. All right? So there are some warning signs that we see before a person gets there. You can ask them, and that certainly is going to give you a clue about it. But such things as people joking about death, or talking about suicide, or writing about it, or in some way communicating on that. You know, typically, people who give away their prized possessions, distribute those amongst friends. That's a way of arranging for closure. Making their final arrangements. That's not pre-planning a funeral. But that is, in a sense it is, but it's not in the traditional sense. The depressive symptoms we talked about. Sudden unexplained recovery. In other words, a person's been depressed, and all of a sudden, they just seem like, well, they bounce back. They're happy. They're okay now. Guess what? That may not mean that. It may mean they have made a decision to carry out what they were so depressed about. And that happens usually within just a few days. Marked feelings of helplessness or hopelessness. In other words, there's no reason to go on. I'm helpless and I'm hopeless. We'll also see them sometimes taking risk-taking behaviors. And we may find them self-mutilating. These are the cutters. These are the folks that will cut on themselves or carve on themselves. And self-mutilation sometimes is certainly a sign that a person wants to die, or that they are trying out to see where they bleed, how they bleed, and so forth. A plan. If someone's got a plan, that would be an indication. And that's why I would ask, if I say, are you thinking about hurting yourself? If a person says, yeah, I've thought about that, then I'm going to ask them, Well, if you did, then what would you do? And they may tell me they've got a gun, or they may tell me that they've got some pills. And in that case, that's a pretty clear plan. And we need to get that person some help. By the way, suicidal depression is one of the three criteria for inpatient hospitalization. Don't ever play with this. If someone tells you that they are trying to kill themselves or want to kill themselves, you need to get them to either the emergency room or to an agency that can do an effective evaluation with them. That is not most of us. So, if you err, then err on that behalf. Take them and get them an evaluation. The worst you get is an evaluation. The best you may get is save someone's life. So, we may see a change in their behavior. We may see losses. They may start out after chemicals. But I want to suggest that the working definition of anger, of depression, is anger turned inward. Anger turned outward is rage, and that's real easy to see. This is the person that gets mad and knocks a hole in the wall or does some kind of damage or strikes a person. That's easy to see, and that actually is easier to work with, although it's pretty ugly. But anger that is turned inward is very difficult to see. This is the person, I don't want to hurt anybody, but they end up wanting to hurt themselves. They're not dealing with their anger. They're just kind of stuffing it and letting it seethe. And ultimately, that anger just boils into major depression, suicidal depression. Some personality types are typical to act in anyway. There are some people that are just quiet by nature. Those are the ones that you need to watch. Your mother may have told you, young ladies, to watch out for the quiet boys. Well, the quiet boys sometimes are the ones that are thinking about, do I even want to be here? The quiet girls, too. But that's not to say that others don't think about that. But watch out for people who are acting in. They're harder to read. So the quiet ones, the shy ones, be sure to give some special attention because their signs will be much more subtle. Paul talks about what to do with depression. And he says, "Finally, brethren, whatever is true, noble, right, pure, lovely, admirable, excellent, praiseworthy, think on these things." Now, what he tells us is that the way to alter our minds is to get our minds on positive things. Now, when we look at that, and we can put that into any of these lessons we've had this week, that tells us what God wants us to be thinking about. He doesn't want our minds in the gutter. He doesn't want us out here fixated on the entertainment of the world. He wants us to be thinking about the things that fall in this category. And so often, we spend our days in negativity. We spend our days hearing what's wrong with everything. But these are the things God wants us to think on. And then I want you to notice something. I talk to people and I ask them sometimes, okay, you're a Christian, where is the joy? God promised it to you. Does God keep His promises? Where is the joy in your life? Where is the peace in your life? And people say, well, you know, I don't have joy and I don't have peace and I don't know why. Or I don't have hope and I don't know why. Well, maybe it's because we haven't been thinking about the right things. Because this says, think on these things and look at the promise. There's a promise tied to this. And the promise is, the peace of God will guard your heart and your life in Christ Jesus. Why? Because you think on those things. You think about garbage, say the old adage with a computer, garbage in, garbage out. That's exactly what you're going to get if you're dwelling on the wrong kinds of things, the negative things, what stinks in life. And we dwell on the negative, that's going to be enough to depress anybody. And when depression is the result, then why would we be surprised about that? We need to have an optimistic outlook on life. In Deuteronomy, we find the Lord Himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. Need to correct some typos on that one. The psalmist also said that about how God delivers us from all of our troubles. You see how there's hope in those statements? Depression doesn't have hope, but these statements have hope within them. Whatever I'm doing here, God will deliver me. Now, in my life, I've been depressed a few times, and most of the time when I get depressed, I realize that God, and I believe it this way, that God is taking me to school. There's something I need to learn in the valley of despair. And you know, that's where I learn my greatest lessons in life, is when I'm in the valley of despair. I don't learn my greatest lessons when I'm on the mountaintop and everything's okay. I learn them down in the valley. And that's where you may learn them too, because it's there that we come face to face with ourself and we come face to face with God. Now, what I pray to God when I'm down in the valley, I ask Him, Lord, okay, show me what I need to see, help me with what I need to do, and help me learn the lesson I need to learn, and then get me out of here. Anybody else feel like that? All right. So there are lessons to be learned when we're down the valley. The psalmist said, I waited patiently for the Lord, and He turned to me, and He heard my cry, and then He lifted me out of the slimy pit. This is a passage, you can read the rest of it. This is a passage that when we started our business Leaving the Pit, that this is our theme passage, that God lifts us out of the pit. Now, I want you to just say something. I want to say something about that. He lifted me out of the slimy pit. This word slimy pit denotes, the word slimy denotes a kind of a wet clay that is in there, kind of like you'd make pottery out of. It's wet clay. Somebody fell down in a hole and there's wet clay. You can't get a grip or a foothold on anything. And so you're just in here clawing, but you're not making any progress on that. And David said, I was in a pit like that. And he's talking about a mood, an emotion that was there. And what God did is God reached down in the pit and lifted him out. Sometimes God uses us to do that, to reach down into the pit where someone is stuck in life, can't get out, doesn't see any hope of getting out, and we can reach down there and help that person out because they can't get out by themselves. And that's what David's talking about. You ever been there? Have you ever helped anybody out of something like that? And we'll talk about ways to help people in just a moment. There's some other passages, and it talks about how God's going to exalt us. And I won't read all those, but you see that there are many passages. Okay, we talked about the dangers or behaviors of depression. One that we may not have talked as much about is disturbed sleep. Folks aren't sleeping well. They're either sleeping too long or they're not sleeping long enough. They can't sleep or they oversleep. And by oversleeping, they may sleep 10, 12, 15 hours. And then when they get up, they're really not rested. They wake up tired. Even after a normal night, they've had disturbing dreams and perhaps recurring dreams that they just can't get rid of. This is what's going on. And we talked about some of these other things already. All right. But the sensations of utter despair. Some of the things we've talked about this week also would be there, like the phobias, the anxiety, also go there. Anxiety and depression tend to travel together. And the thoughts of suicide, we talked about that, changes in our appetite. Sometimes that besides just our thinking, that there are some physical things that go on with us. Post-surgery, a person especially, and I notice it especially, with open heart surgery. When someone's had a major, major surgery, you've had your chest cavity pried open and you know, you've been put back together, it is very typical to have a down effect after that, to have a period of depression. That's normal because the body has been traumatized by the surgery. There are other times, such as during a woman's cycle or right after they've had a child. There are times the hormonal changes that take place during that time sometimes get a person into depression. There's a specific type of depression I'll talk about in just a moment that goes with that. Manic depression. Sometimes some types of mania have been shown actually to have a genetic base. In other words, it travels in families. When I first started doing this particular series, people started telling me, well, I'm depressed, or that I'm bipolar, which is manic depression. And they would tell me that, and I'm talking about members of the church, and it's like, why am I, this is not the way it is in the usual population. Why is it with members of the church that depression, I understand, are different types, but why bipolar? Why are we seeing so much of that? And then why are we seeing the self-medicating? I understand that from the general population. But manic depression, people get all on a buzz and then hit the pit. Why is that? I don't know the answer to that, but I have observed that it's fairly common among God's people. So if that's the case, and I think it is, then when someone is really excited, we need to rejoice with those that rejoice. When someone is down in the pit and they're weeping, we need to weep with those that weep. Don't leave them alone. That's not what that passage says. The passage says you need to link with them and kind of ride things through with each other. Sometimes medical cause can be hormone deficiencies. A thyroid disturbance. When someone's got a problem with a hyperactive or an underactive thyroid, that can create a depressed mood. And that's really about your body chemistry. That's not about anything happening around you. But a thyroid condition that's out of whack can kind of send you up and down. So there may be, if someone is depressed, there may be something actually physically going on with them that we need to be aware of. During the winter time, there is when seasons are dark, where people don't get out in the sun very much, they don't have a lot of sunlight, and so there is a type of depression called seasonal affective disorder. And we use light therapy for that. Do you realize that most people in our culture are vitamin D deficient? And that's primarily because we don't spend a lot of time outside. We spend a lot of time inside. We wear long sleeves. We cover up. And the sun doesn't get to us, so we don't naturally absorb sunlight. We sit inside behind a computer or watching TV or playing video games. We don't get a lot of sunlight. And the result of that is a pretty significant vitamin D, D3 deficiency. And that is a cause of depression. So sometimes it's because we aren't getting out and about like we need to. Of course, if you're like me and probably like Tim, when you go out in the sun, you probably turn bright red and then you peel a layer or two of skin off. At least I do. All right. And my children do. That's why I know redheads do that. I have two redhead children. But we also see that alcoholism. Alcohol is a central nervous system depressant. And guess what a depressant does? It makes you depressed. Now, if you add that on top of already being depressed, now guess what? You're mega depressed. No wonder that the majority of suicides are carried out by someone who is in an alcoholic state or an alcohol state. And so they kill themselves, whereas without the alcohol, many of them don't even think about suicide. But with the alcohol, they do. Drug dependency, that's also there. Sometimes people intentionally overdose, and sometimes they accidentally overdose. The intentional ones will do that often because they're depressed. They're sick and tired of being sick and tired. They don't want to go on. They don't know how to do this. They failed a number of times, and I'm just done. And so they will attempt to kill themselves. Food allergies can also create some medical issues. Food allergies can give strange reactions to medications, to chemicals, and to food additives. And I would suggest on this, just a side note, that when you start when you're on a medication or you add a medication, you need to ask for the printout that goes with that in the PDR, Physician's Desk Reference, or Facts and Comparisons would be a book more for the generics. And what that's going to tell you is what the potential side effects of this medication in your body are. It's a serious thing when we take a pill an oral medication, when we take that to alter our body chemistry, you need to know what you're doing and how and what the potential is in your body, not only to heal you, but also what the potential dangers are with that. Enough said about that. I can go a long time with that. all right. So there are 8 major causes of depression, and we got those listed out here. Life stressors, anger, guilt, parental rejection, helplessness, and sometimes the biological propensity that some families are just depressed families. And I think that's probably genetic, or else it's at least how they're socialized. Here's what depression is not. People say, oh, snap out of it. It's just in your mind. Don't ever tell a depressed person that. What that does is make the person feel guilty. This is within my control. And it may not be. Or you're just making that up. Or, well, you're just lazy. You don't even want to get out of bed. Well, you'll only be sad for a couple of days. You'll get over it. Or it's not being stressed. Stress can happen without depression. Depression is not necessarily, sometimes it is, as in the case with David, but depression is not necessarily a sign of a lack of faith. In other words, our faith may be intact, but we're having a period of depression, either because of something physical or because some thought process or some event out here has happened to us, and that has altered us where we are in a depressed state. It's not a message from God. You're depressed, and so God is trying to wake you up and shake you up by making you depressed. It's not a message from God that you're not faithful. And it can't be fixed just by, well, you just need to get better. You know, a lot of times we get frustrated with people, and we'll say some things that don't help the situation. Fact is, they may well help it to get worse. Now, there are 9 types of depression. So when a person tells me they're depressed, I ask them, well, what kind of depression you have? And most of them just look at me. I went to see a doctor a couple years ago. I was kind of tired and worn down, and I went to see a doctor. I hadn't had a physical in a while, and the doctor asked me 2 or 3 questions. Had never seen this doctor. They wanted to know my name, and they wanted to know some things about what brought me in today. And then I said, well, I'm kind of tired. I don't have the energy that I normally have. And the next thing out of the doctor's mouth is, you're depressed. I want to start you on an antidepressant. Well, guess what? I looked at her and I said, doctor, you don't know me. This is not depression. I diagnosed depression. And this is not depression. You need to keep asking your questions. We're looking for something else. And I learned I could talk back to my doctor. She looked at me, and I didn't really care if she put me out of her office or not. You don't put me on an antidepressant after 3 questions. I would never think of even suggesting that to a person. So she kept asking some questions, and lo and behold, there was a medical problem that we worked on and got pretty much under control. But sometimes you have people that are quick to say, oh, that's depression, so let's get you on an antidepressant. And sometimes that's the case. Well, major depression is probably the most common depression. And it basically is when we get way down in the pit and we just are almost flatlined on any happiness or joy in life. We're feeling hopeless and helpless. That's pretty much what I've talked about mostly so far. But there's another kind of depression that I see more among God's children, and this is the depression called dysthymia. Now, dysthymia occurs when a person is functional. We get up, we go about our job, we do the things we do, we maintain our relationships. But dysthymia is when there is a generalized sadness about us. This is typical of us, not just occasional. It's typical. It's folks that when you see them, they look like they were weaned on a pickle. They're so just sad, sour. That's dysthymia. And I see that. Lack of joy, lack of peace, lack of satisfaction in life. Just kind of like, okay. Kind of like Eeyore. Y'all know who Eeyore is? Okay. Kind of like Eeyore. By the way, the other end of that is Tigger. Tigger's manic. He's so manic. While I'm on that sideline, do you know that the Winnie the Pooh series is based on the personality disorders? And each of those characters is a personality disorder. Guess who the dependent personality is? Piglet. And who's the therapist? Christopher Robin. Somebody say that? Take a look at those. And those visualize for you the personality disorder. That's another subject. All right. We talked about seasonal affective disorder. Postpartum depression is often seen. I have heard some horrible things from my brethren on this. There was one brother who wanted to know what my position was on depression, and he believes that all depression is sin. All depression is lack of faith. That's what he wrote back to me. And so I wrote him back and I said, even postpartum depression? And he said, oh yes, postpartum depression is a sin because the mom and dad hate their baby and want to see their baby dead. And I thought, I'm glad I don't go where you preach. Another preacher preached a lesson, and he said, all depression is a sin against God. It's like if you were to sit on a tack, and the tack goes up in your rear, and you sit on that tack, and it hurts, and every time you wiggle, it hurts, and you have the ability to take that tack out anytime you want to, but you choose to sit on it. Like, well, that doesn't seem right. So I wrote him back. And by the way, there were a number of members from the congregation where he preached that were coming to see me for depression. I guess that would depress me. Somebody tell me it's like sticking a tack in your seat of your pants, and that's what depression is. No, 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 no. Now I want to say this. If we're going to preach and we're going to get a little bit out of our comfort zone, we need to give factual information. People are listening to us. And you need to push back if somebody says something like that. But anyway, we talked about seasonal affective disorder. Atypical depression doesn't look like depression. This is the person that's all bubbly and they look like they're just fine. But they're running from their depression. Now that's hard to see. It's hard to see it. But when you get that person settled down past all the giggly, past the facade, and you start seeing a very sad, angry person, that's atypical depression. Well, we also have psychotic depression. To say that is almost to answer it, and that's a person that's crazy and acting out of their head. Bipolar or manic depression, we've talked about. This one is the one I talked about that goes with hormonal cycles, and it's called premenstrual dysphoric disorder. You don't have to remember that, but this is more than PMS. This goes to a whole different level than PMS. And some women really struggle with this on a regular basis, and they just say, well, I'm just PMSing. But that's not the case. It's a form of depression and needs to be diagnosed as that. So just because somebody's really moody during that particular time doesn't mean that they're depressed. But there is a type that goes with that. And then there's situational depression. I'm depressed because something's happened in my life that has caused me to be depressed. Men are less likely to admit they are depressed. Men, when they are depressed, will generally pour on steam and they will work more. That's more atypical depression. They'll go out and work more. Or they'll go out, do more hunting, more fishing, more isolation kind of stuff. So it's a little hard sometimes to see who is the avid sportsman and who is the person that's depressed. And by the way, sometime when they get out in the woods, that's their opportunity to do something pretty lethal in hurting themselves. Well, that's not always the case when you go out hunting. But women experience depression twice as much as men. That's just an interesting number to me. Men's depression is often masked by alcohol and drugs, or by the socially acceptable habits, even like pouring themselves into excessive sports activities. This may be the person who doesn't just run, but they run all the time, long periods of time, and neglect other responsibilities. It generally shows up in men not as a feeling of hopeless and helplessness, but in terms of irritability, anger, and discouragement. Now, what does that mean? What does that look like if that happens to be your husband, ladies? Then here he is, cranky and angry and discouraged. It's like, I don't care. Just do what you want to do. This person's given up on something. That's a symptom, or can be a symptom, of depression. Job talked about that, about darkness and a deep cloud of death. Job also talked about anger, and talks about people who tear folks apart in their anger. And he has some questions there. You can read that. Job also had some other things to say about it. David, after he confesses his guilt, his depression lifts. And he talks about how his vitality was turned downward, but afterwards it was lifted back up. David wrote these Psalms. Now I want you to notice on these Psalms, what's David doing? Not just what he says, but what is he doing? David is journaling. David is writing poetry. And what this does is it helps him in his depression. It helps him to meditate and to reflect. So what are some of the things that we do to help people who are depressed? We journal. We write poetry. We have periods of meditation. We get aside by ourselves, like on a hill, and we may look at the events of nature, or just kind of let our head catch up with ourselves, and we spend that time. That's what David was doing. We get so caught up on what he said that we don't always look at what he was doing. See that? So how are you going to work through that? How could David work through that? It's right there. He was working through it. Now, in a depressed family, just like in an addicted family, there are some rules. In other words, we've got status quo. Well, there are some things that we're ashamed of. Well, we don't want folks to know that we're walking around as the gloomy family. We're not the relatives of Eeyore. So instead, what we do is we have these unspoken words. Don't feel, which could be expressed in, well, you shouldn't feel that way. Well, you have so much to be thankful for. What do we tell them? Don't feel. Don't talk. Don't let folks know what's going on with you. You'll discourage other people. Don't trust. So you don't know who you can talk to about the things that are bothering you. And you may not know what they'll do with that information. Or will they think down about you? And then don't think. You know, that you're not thinking right, so just get you thinking right and you'll be okay. And sometimes we leave the impression you don't need to change. Well, there's various Bible things here, but let's go back to this man we left out in the wilderness. Elijah is a clear-cut case. He has the symptoms all the way down the diagnostic manual, the symptoms of depression. Well, we left him out in the wilderness, and there he was waiting for some food. God brought him the food. And if you look at 1 Kings 19, he's despairing of life itself. Now look what he says. Look at this self-pity. I'm the only one left. I and I alone am left. Nobody's trying to do right except me. Does that feel like there should be a wah-wah after that? Okay, that's pity pot. That's, you know, crying for yourself. I'm the only one left. And then, God gets him some food, and then God has a conversation with him. And the question is, what are you doing here? And that's a question we need to ask people who are depressed. And so Elijah tells God, well, I'm out here because I'm the only one left trying to serve you. And actually, Elijah shows classic signs also of burnout. You hear people talk about midlife crisis. I don't know how he was, but I do know these are some symptoms of that as well. And what does God do for him? How does God cure this? Now, here's what God didn't do. He didn't say, well, Elijah, you know, I really sympathize with you, and we've got a cure coming for this. If you'll just wait 2,000 years, I've got a purple pill that we're going to have prescribed for you, and you'll be a lot better. Is that what you read in your Bible? What did God do for him? First thing was wrong with Elijah in this, besides he was exhausted. He let himself wear down to where he was exhausted, and that's when depression's apt to set in. But God told him, you know, Elijah, you need to leave the bookkeeping to me because you're not doing too great with it. You think you're the only ones trying to do right. And besides this, I have 7,000 knees that have not bowed to Baal. You think you're the only one. Guess what? There's 6,999 others that are faithful to me. God knew the number, but Elijah didn't. Now, so the first thing God does is says, you need to get your thinking straight and stay out of my business. Do you think sometimes we get in God's business? And that's exactly what Elijah was doing. He was trying to keep God's numbers. But the second thing he did is God told Elijah, I've got something for you to do. Now, if you'll notice, this wasn't the old stuff. This wasn't, I need you to get up and go do what you know how to do and just live your life backwards. No. God says, I need you to live your life forwards. I've got two kings I want you to anoint. Okay? And he tells them who they are. And you need to go anoint these people as king. All right? So now we have a shift in what your focus in life is. This is a new plan. That's how we address depression. You need something new and fresh to do. And then if that isn't enough, God says, I'm going to really keep you busy because I want you to go start a school. And one of your students is going to be greater than you are. But you're going to need to mentor him. Now, do you see God's remedy for that? Is not leave you out here in a pity pot, but instead to correct your thinking, to give you new tasks to do, and to give you challenges. How do we help people get out of depression? We don't leave them out here sitting in a pity pot. We ask them, what's your thinking like? What's going on? You know, if I'm thinking God's abandoned me or people don't love me or whatever it is, going to deal with that. And then we need to help people to find new direction and new purpose in life. That was God's remedy. And guess what? That'll still work. So God sent Elijah some things. Paul from prison gives us an insight that when things are bad, we don't have to be depressed. But his most positive book in the New Testament, the book of Philippians, was written from a place that was pretty dismal and could be very depressing. And if I'm not mistaken, he wrote a little later about the time of his departure was at hand. He was facing death. But he didn't face it with the idea of, woe is me. Instead, he looked forward to what was on the other side, whether he lived or whether he died. It had to do with his thinking, his attitude. Get your attitude right. And your depression can follow on that. Okay. How do we help ourselves when we're depressed? Well, first is that during our depression, we need to be patient. And that is that don't expect too much of yourself. Several of my clients who are depressed, what I have them do is to text me each day. And here's what I want to know. Because depressed people are not grateful usually. I've not found a depressed person yet that's grateful. You know, what are you grateful for? Had one guy broke out crying, said, I can't think of a thing I'm grateful for. Member of the church. Well, I can think of a lot of things. I gave him several, and he said, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, I forgot that. So, gratefulness. I have several members of the church that I've asked them every day, every morning, I want to know that you're up, and that you're thinking about your day. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to text me each morning two things you're grateful for today. And I don't want the same things every day. I need those things. Then the next thing that I need from you is for you to tell me two goals you have for today, and then tell me what your meditation is for today. That didn't take long, and it didn't take long for me to respond, say good goals or whatever it is I say, but they need to do that, and they get in the habit of doing that each day. Guess what this magical thing is happening? As these people come back and see me and say, you know, things are going a lot better. Going a lot better. What's happening? Their outlook's changed. We need, when we are depressed, we need to take a little break from ourselves. Get some exercise. Now, people will tell you, go get some exercise, but I won't tell you what. The literature shows that in terms of major depression, that aerobic-type exercise, that doesn't mean go join an aerobics class necessarily, but that which gets your heartbeat up for at least 20 minutes, that has been shown in clinical trials to be as effective as an antidepressant. Isn't that something? Why is that? We get our endorphins up, we get our electrolytes, we get our adrenaline flowing, we get pumped, and guess what happens? It addresses our depression. Get some exercise. Okay. That's not to say if you're on medication to stop it, and certainly don't stop it abruptly. We need to avoid things that are going to bring on additional stress. In other words, just kind of chill. Don't get your schedule too full, especially things that are about major changes. Eat well and stay on a well-balanced diet. Diet and exercise are key components to good health and proper thinking. Let others comfort you. Job's friends came to comfort him, and when people come to comfort us, we need to accept the fact that people are concerned about us, and they came to check on us. And that goes back to gratitude, doesn't it? If we can't resolve our depression ourselves, then we don't want to wait, but we want to go and see what's going on, and what may look like depression might in fact be something else. People who are diabetic sometimes present as depressed, but there's something going on with their A1C. So there may be something else really going on. Sometimes people with cancer that don't know they have cancer yet, they present as tired and sluggish, and they appear depressed, but they're not depressed. They have cancer. So don't assume just because we're in a down mood that's the case. All right, how are we going to help a depressed friend? Well, we're going to avoid critical and shaming statements. We're going to empathize with feelings of sadness, grief, anger, and frustration. In other words, if you're angry and frustrated about something, you know what? I've been there too. I understand, or I don't understand. I haven't walked in your shoes. But I tell you what, I'm here for you, and I want to help you any way I can. What we don't do is run into their bedroom and raise the shades up and make them jump out of bed. That's not what you do with a depressed person. That only will make a depressed person, usually will make them more depressed. Don't argue with them when they tell you how bad things are. Don't buy into their negativity. There was a lady that I used to... Someone told me you need to ask people how they are. How you doing today? And I learned there was one sister not to ask that. Because if I asked that, I would have a 20-minute conversation about everything from her hangnail to the lumbago. And I just learned not to ask that question to her. And it's a good day, isn't it, sister? And just hope she didn't go there. Or hope somebody would rescue me if she did. Don't insist that depression or sadness are wrong feelings and that you should never be depressed, that you should always be on the upcycle. That's not true. And don't try to get them out of depression yourself. Instead, be there for and encourage them. All right, there's some summary comments here. But I want to talk with you about this gentleman. Back during the 1930s, there was a department store owner who had been very successful in opening a new chain of department stores. They sold all kinds of stuff, and the folks across the country flocked to those stores so much, this guy thought, I'm on a roll, and he opened more stores and more stores and more stores. And then came the Great Depression. And this man found himself, I'm going to lose everything I have. I'm going to be out on the street. He got very depressed. And he was put into a psychiatric ward in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And they did what they knew to do at that time for the depressive state he was in. And he didn't respond. He just kept getting worse and worse. And the doctors didn't know what to do. So happened the man had a spiritual mind. And one Sunday morning, as he was walking in his depression, one Sunday morning he walked down the hall, shuffled down the hall, and from the chapel he heard this song. Be not dismayed, whate'er betide, God will take care of you. Beneath his wings of love abide, God will take care of you. God will take care of you through every day or all the way. He will take care of you. God will take care of you. And this man later on wrote some other things. And what he concluded is that he had decided that in his journey to success, he was saying, I will take care of me. And in that moment, he learned, it's not about me. God has you. Trust Him. God will take care of you. Whatever's happening in your life, good or bad, we have some horrible times on this earth and some joyous ones too. But whatever's going on in your life, don't ever forget that however dark the night, that God has a morning for you. No matter how bad things look, you can always look up and you can see there's a much bigger picture than just us. God will take care of you. You believe that? Maybe you need to respond some way by asking for some prayers this evening. And I'm just amazed that nobody here is needing prayers. Anybody else amazed by that? And if you need some group prayers, that's part of why we sing this song of encouragement. Or maybe someone has things going in their life. Maybe your attitude hadn't been right. Maybe you've succumbed to some of these things we've talked about. This is a time to acknowledge that you repent of those things and that you want to ask for some help in order to overcome those. And we'll help you. Or maybe you want to come tonight and be baptized into Christ. But whatever your condition, don't just stand there while we sing. If you need to come to the front, do that. And do it now while we stand and sing.